Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the big bad wolf.
That should be a Pavlovian response to you at this point. When you hear that song, you know what's coming up. The Christo Radio Show. We don't have a name for it yet, so we're going to keep calling it the Christo Radio Show until we get a name for it. We're live today, so we're going to go out on a limb here and throw that number out there. If anybody wants to call in, now's your golden opportunity. 714-242-5272. We're going to see if that works at all, if we get any callers. Well, we'll see how that goes. Now, if you try calling in, like, tomorrow or something, because you're listening to this not live, like, right now, you're wasting your time. So now's the chance. There's brilliant ideas. He'll answer the phone. He's going to also monitor. If it sounds like you don't need to be on the air, nothing personal. You just don't need to be on the air. Anyway, got a great show today. But I'm going to talk real quick about what's fresh and tasty right now. And I gauge everything by what I see in Chinatown. Because Chinatown always has the freshest stuff. They're not buying anything that isn't in season right now. And right now it's cherries. Bing cherries by the boatload. So if you're looking for something that's fresh right now in season, go out and get yourself cherries. And I'm going to give you a little grilling tip. We're going to talk about reverse searing on next week's program, but this week we're just going to talk about a simple little thing that you can do. If you like your steaks medium rare, put them in the freezer a little bit, get them really cold, make sure they're, you know, not fully icy, just good and cold. Then when you take them out, dry them off really, really good, get salt on both sides, throw them on a really hot grill. You're going to get such a nice crust. The inside is going to stay pink and juicy. It's going to be excellent. You'll love it. I do it all the time. Another thing I like to talk about a little bit is what's cooking in my kitchen. Now, I've been experimenting lately. I've been having some downtime, so I've been making chocolates. I've often made truffles in the past. You know, you just make a ganache and you roll them up into a ball and make a truffle. But here I've been making the ganache, but I've been trying to make a filled chocolate, you know, where it's kind of got a crunchy coating on the outside of chocolate, and then it's got the soft, creamy inside. Well, I've been making those lately, and I've experimented, and now I've taken some caramel syrup, and I've done the shell, the ganache, and then when the ganache is almost cooled off, I poke a little tiny little hole in there with a chopstick, and I fill it up with a little bit of caramel, and then I top it off with the other shell. So you kind of get like a little bit of a, I don't know if you have those Cadbury bars that have the caramel inside, but it turns into something just like that. Really delicious. And that's about it. We do need a name for the show. So if anybody, you know, come up with something, well, we'll just keep calling it the Christo Show. And on the Christo Show today, we have one of my colleagues, a Charbroil All-Star. He's a great photographer and a whiskey, bourbon, distilled spirits expert, in my opinion. Kurt McAdams. Hey, Kurt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Kurt, welcome to the show today.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we just got back from being in Vegas last week.
Yeah, that was a long 2 or 3 days, but a lot of fun.
Well, you made the most of it. You ended up staying out there a little bit longer, and then you traveled around and saw the Grand Canyon, and you actually really maximized that trip out west.
Yeah, we went to Vegas a couple of days early, kind of enjoyed that for a bit, and then got away from all the people and went to the Grand Canyon, and it was nice to get back, but it was a fun trip.
Your photos of the Grand Canyon were real nice. That was pretty cool. We walked around this area in Vegas called Fremont or Old Fremont, or I'm not sure exactly what they call it, but that's a little bit like a Grand Canyon all by itself.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I got some video on some people that I'll hold hostage, but...
Have they made you any payments yet to
we'll be waiting.
Time to get that extortion wheels rolling there.
Yeah.
Blackmail.
Yeah, use what
I got. Blackmail or is that extortion? I think they're both the same.
I think they both work in this instance, I think.
Well, let's jump right into talking a little bit about some spirits. Now, probably a lot of listeners out there might be wondering what it means when something's a single malt or something like that. You know, the different terms that people use when they're discussing a scotch or a bourbon or something like that. But what does it mean when they say something like that?
Well, with single malt, you're talking about primarily scotches. They're malt whiskeys. There are certain rules around, what you can call what. And so, if it's called scotch, just think it's made in Scotland. But there's a lot of differences between blends and single malts, single casks, all those things. But a single malt means that it's made at one distillery from one single malt. And it may be lots of barrels that are mixed together, but they're all from the same recipe. Think of it that way, just to make it really simple.
Oh, okay. So that is kind of neat to know, because it could be a multiple barrels that are all coming together, but it's still just basically the same recipe. So they're not putting together something from, like, say, last year and then this year, would they?
They could. It can be different ages. Typically, it's not. But when you get into blended whiskeys and blended malts, and that confuses a lot of people. Back in the 70s and 80s, blended whiskeys were really popular because, one, they're a little more predictable, and two, they're sometimes less expensive to make. I say sometimes. But that means it's like 60% of some sort of grain alcohol and 40% what we would call scotch. But it could be any mix of those that you want. And some of those are actually quite good. Yeah, some of the Johnny Walkers, once you get around up to black or above that, you're getting into a drinkable whiskey. And if you're going to do cocktails, that's a better way to go if you're going to mix it. But then you have what you call blended malts, which are a bunch of single malts all put together, but it's all scotch whiskey. An example of that that's really kind of neat is several years ago, an expedition that went down to Antarctica found some leftover scotch from Shackleton's expedition in 1907. And it was sent for medicinal purpose back then, of course. And they recreated it, and it's got whiskeys from all over Scotland from, I think, 7 or 8 years up to 40 years old, and they tried to recreate it. And it's you're going to spend $170 a bottle for that probably, but it's really excellent whiskey. So there's a big variety in those.
Yeah, it sounds like it, and it's almost as daunting and probably even more confusing than the wine choices that are out there. Now, I know a couple weeks ago I reached out to you. I thought I was going to be doing a Kentucky Derby thing, so I was trying to come up with some new recipes, and I reached out and asked you, and you came up with a fantastic idea with pecans, right?
Yeah, and it's I don't know how it popped in my head. Other than I make a bourbon pecan pie that I really like a lot. I thought, I see bourbon with all this stuff, but I don't see it with pecans a lot. And so I set up a test, and it's on my website too, livefireonline.com, where I took the same bourbon, a couple ounces in four different jars, and threw a handful of crushed pecans in each one.
Now, hold on. Let me interrupt you for just a second to let everybody know that the reason pecans, the mint julep, as everybody knows, is the drink of the Kentucky Derby. But maybe not everybody's so well aware that pecans are just as important. There's so many different pecan pies and pecan recipes that go hand in hand with the Kentucky Derby also. So pecans are, they're in the realm of the Kentucky Derby. Anyway, so go ahead. Tell us about your recipe a little bit.
Yeah, so I took, you know, to the 2 ounces, I put in maybe about 3/4 of an ounce of pecans and just let them sit. And I started, after 24 hours, I strained out the pecans with some cheesecloth and made a mint julep with it. And what I got from a day was a really nice nutty flavor added to the bourbon. And I used a pretty decent bourbon. I think I used Elijah Craig 12-year-old, which is a pretty approachable bourbon price range, and it's actually a really excellent one to have around. I ended up liking the one day quite a bit, so I thought maybe 2 days will be even better. What I found after 2 days, though, is the pecans have some tannins and other things in them, and 2 days' soak pulled a little bit too much of that out. So it started to get a little rough. Maybe that's a good way to put it. So just by, you know, completely empirical testing, I found that up to 24 hours worked pretty well. So I ended up with a pecan mint julep base. I used some Magee sweet sap, which I know you've tried before, which is a sweetener kind of like molasses, and you could use a light molasses instead, and made a mint julep out of it. And thought, well, that worked out pretty well, but I think you've known me enough now. I like to add smoke to lots of stuff too. So
the smoking technique is probably the brainchild behind this one. Go ahead. It's such an amazing
idea. So I have pecan wood, which is my favorite smoking wood anyway, and I got some chunks smoldering pretty well, and I just simply took a glass and put it over the top of one of those chunks for about 30 seconds. Let it fill up with smoke really well, kind of just lined the glass a little bit, and then let it dissipate, and then I turned it back upside down just to take it back into the house. And so I made a mint julep out of it with the pecan bourbon. So with that, I took about a tablespoon of the sweetener with about 5 mint leaves that I tore up a little bit and rubbed together just to get the oils going. And then I muddled that with a muddler. That's what it's called, so that's what it does, right? added the bourbon to it, the pecan bourbon that had soaked for just a day. And
now, hold on, let me just, if anybody doesn't know what a muddler is, it looks like the same thing that you use when you're using a mortar and pestle. It's like the pestle, but it's a lot longer because it gets into the bottom of the glass. They make some really fancy ones. And they make very common ones. They're wood. You can get some fancy ones out of different materials. But it's just like, it's a rounded, ended, like a little stick. Anyway.
Well, and the one I like is just it's a good gripped one, so you can get it just about anywhere. It's stainless steel, easy to wash, and it's cheap. And it does the job well. So, and the mint julep can be made in a traditional mint julep glass. On my website, I use just a tall glass so that I could see what was in it. So I have the mint leaves, the sweetener, put the bourbon in, stirred that up, and then just added a bunch of ice to it. But the idea is you want this really cold. Then I take a spoon, stir it up, and get the glass so it's just dripping with condensation, and put a mint sprig on the top, took a sip of it, I got like this perfume of smoke that had enveloped the inside of the glass, that nutty pecan flavor. I think the molasses or sweet sap gives it a little bit of a depth and earthiness to it. But that bourbon came in nice and sweet and just added the finishing touch to the whole thing. It ended up being a really nice drink. And I remember
that sounds
like
an excellent drink.
Of it.
That's,
Well, it's one when I took a sip, I told my wife, this is one I'd actually order at a bar.
Yeah, that sounds so good. It's like the smoky pecan mint julep. See if I can come up with a snappy name for it, because listing the ingredients is not really a name, but
yeah,
that sounds so good. And the mint, in this case, is probably the lifesaver. Now, normally the mint julep is just to that mint effect, but I think with all the other flavors you have going on, the smoke, the pecans that have been infused, and then the maguey sweet sap. And the maguey sweet sap has a unique flavor all on its own. It's not quite like molasses. It kind of tastes a little toasted, but it's not. It has a really unique flavor, and it just sounds like the mint would be just enough to balance all of those earthy flavors out, because they're all pretty earthy, the bourbon,
yeah,
the pecan.
Yeah, and I think
you're
right, that mint gives that high note that you need.
Yeah, because I think without the mint, it would, probably wouldn't work. There's probably not any other thing that you could put in there that would work the same as that. And I think it probably...
No, I agree.
It's not over-minty either, right? Is it?
No, and that's... I've had enough mint juleps in my life that one thing I can tell you, if you're making one, 4 or 5 leaves and stop. It's not a pure mint drink. If you can't taste the bourbon, you went too far.
Well, no, and I think that's important, because I was looking at the internet this morning and I saw that our host who runs this program here, Brilliant Ideas Radio, was really concerned about his mint intake, because he's concerned that it's what's adding to his weight gain. It's not all the pork and it's not all the cheese and all that other stuff he's eating all the time. He's pretty much convinced himself it's the mint. And I think, I know he was being funny, but just so we know. And he can hear us right now. He might chime in. Who knows? But I'm kind of trying to lure him in. But anyway, go ahead and have mint. I don't think it's going to affect you that bad. But that sounds like a great drink. Have you experimented and made anything else as unique as that? I know you did a lot of things with the maguey sweet sap.
By the way,
made a pumpkin pound
cake.
It
is the mint.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd let you know.
Oh, it's brilliant there. Huh? It's the mint, right?
It's definitely the mint. Go ahead.
Well, I think Kurt nailed it when he said, when he was squeezing it and getting it, it's the oils. Those could be fattening.
It's oil. Too much oil.
That's
in your
fat.
Diet.
Hey, you got mint oil. See, you're just, it's too much fat. So, Kurt, you've made some other stuff with the maguey sweet sap.
Yeah,
I know you made a drunken pound cake before, and you've experimented quite a bit with that.
Yeah, well, I like the sweet sap quite a bit, as you know, but it works great in cocktails. Anytime I've used molasses, I've started to substitute it, and it gives you just enough, like you said, it has that toasty, it's almost like a creme brulee meets molasses flavor in a way.
Mm-hmm. That's about it. That sums it up a little bit. It tastes, and it's that creme brulee that doesn't make any sense because it's not toasted.
Right. In fact, it's raw, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's organic and all that stuff, too. So,
And it's a nutritional
cocktail.
Sweetener.
It's got fiber,
it has
and protein,
a nutritional
both.
Value to it, which is unusual for a sweetener.
Yeah, so I've used it. I've substituted sugar in cocktails. If you take like an old fashioned and add that sweet sap instead of sugar, you get a little bit of that fruit and citrus that you might add to it, balanced with that earthiness of the sweetener, and then a rye whiskey that gives you spice, and that's a really nice combination too. But the dessert you're talking about is just a grilled pound cake with berries that I macerate with the sweetener, and add a little bit of pastry cream to it. It just makes a really interesting dessert that can be done kind of on the fly. You don't have to do a lot of
mm-hmm.
prep. I think I bought a pound cake at a local gourmet store, so it was a very good pound cake, but I didn't have to take the trouble of making it. You can have people over, put this together, and they think you're a genius.
That sounds so good, too. You know, and I like when people use words like macerate. because if anyone's not paying attention out there and all of a sudden they hear Macerate, they all of a sudden the radio program turns PG-13. They're not sure. They're like, what? Did he just say Macerate?
So all that is,
we'll get some listeners.
As you know, all that is you take berries and you kind of break them up as you heat them up a bit. You're not really cooking them, but you're heating them, getting some of the, the juices out of it and cooking them down enough so they're not in a true raw form. And I usually add a little bit of bourbon to that, too. It never hurts adding bourbon to whatever you're having, I don't think.
You know, you're giving me an idea here of some things to talk about in the future, because infused is similar to macerate, and marinade is also similar. But they mean different things, and they do different things in the cooking world. So if you're marinating something, you're not necessarily macerating it, even though it sounds like you are. You know, you're soaking something in a liquid, but you're doing a little bit something different. And same with infusing, because you're still soaking something in a liquid. So that's
going
to have to study up more.
In the infusing, you want the liquid, not the solid, right?
Right. And macerating, you're kind of almost making it like a combined ingredient. Like with a marinade, you're not going to necessarily chop up the meat a little bit and mix in and have it become like soupy with the marinade. But with macerating, you would.
Right, right. It usually goes on top of something, or actually you can use it as a marinade if you want to after you macerate.
Now we're getting technical here. Whatever listeners we have, we just lost them now. They're like, well, wait a minute, this macerate, that's not a dirty word. Darn. And then they... So let's see, what else do we have going on? I know Vegas was kind of cool. We, as Charbroil All-Stars, we meet up once a year, and we get to go to cool places and talk about what's coming up in the grilling world. We learn all kinds of secrets that we try to pass on to people as the year goes by.
And then right, we have a cook-off, and Crystal beats us all.
We have a cook-off, and I like to beat everybody, but I don't every time. Although I did this last time.
Yeah, you and Danielle did
a great
job.
Well, I was with a partner, though, me and Danielle. Danielle Dimofsky, she's Diva Q. When you've got the world champion of pork as your teammate, and one of the ingredients is pork, it's hard, you know. It was in the bag on that one.
Well, to let your listeners know, I know I can cook. But when I get in a room with Christo, it's a completely different level. So I try to watch and learn from him.
Well, thank you very much for saying that.
Really,
I appreciate that.
Oh, you do amazing work.
Thank you. Thank you. It just makes me misty. Thank you. I really work hard at it. But, you know, Mutual Admiration Society here, you need to log on to livewire.com and check out Kurt's photographs. Check out the different things he's doing with bourbons and whiskeys and ryes and spirits. He's thinking up some things here because of his enormous experience. He comes up with a smoky glass with infused pecans, and we just did that on the fly over chat, and before you know it, he had made it. So it's, you know, the admiration goes both ways on this. I reached out to you on that because I couldn't have thought of that.
You mentioned the All-Star trip that we've taken. That's our third trip, and I always look forward to it. It's a great group of people. But, you know, 2 years ago we got together and all looked at each other awkwardly until we got to know each other a bit. And now it's just kind of a reunion, and it's really a fun group of people that have a lot of skill. So I really appreciate being around everybody, and I think we had a great time again this year.
And everyone has a diverse bunch of skills. We have, it's not just coming from one angle. What we do all have in common is that we all wrote blogs, and that's what brought us all together was the blogging. But even as bloggers, we all, you know, have a different way of doing it, and different audience bases and a lot of crossover on the audience, but only because that's just the nature of the internet at this point.
Well, and we all agree also that that's a subset already there, right?
Mm-hmm. The information highway is not a four-lane road. It's just a tiny little. It's a two-way. It goes one way and then it goes back the other way. It's not as. There's not a lot of exits. There's not. It's just we're all on the same highway there.
Well, it's been fun for me watching the group because people like you and David and Jane and Julie seeing your photography just grow in quality leaps and bounds. I mean, you're doing top quality stuff with that too. Not only are you making great food, you're making it look great in the photos.
Thanks. And I just use my iPhone. I know everyone else has, you know, got cameras and they're doing all this, you know, learning a lot about photography, but I'm just using an iPhone. But I have to give some background on that. I'm not just coming in cold. I did work in the photo lab in college. I did work as an art director and as a fashion stylist for many, many years. I've been around cameras and photography all of my adult life, since age 20 up until now. So I'm no stranger to photography. It's just I just don't use a camera. I just use whatever phone I happen to have.
And it works well. I actually have a fine arts background, too. I studied architecture originally at Carnegie Mellon. And then got into data instead. So, and then I cook.
Now, what I've always tried to do now is try to get more of my artistic background to cross over into my food, and I finally feel that I'm getting where I can do that consistently. You know, it's not easy to make a nice, pretty plate. It looks like when you see people who do it and it looks like, wow, that looks so easy. Like they just scattered that on there and it looks effortless, but it's not really, it does take, you know, it's hard to be effortless. You know, it's
exactly. It takes
not that I'm comparing myself to a fine artist, yeah, it's hard to do that. You know, but Pablo Picasso studied how to be a master painter before he learned how to scribble.
Yep. Well, you probably used to comb your hair in a certain way, and now look at it. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
That's a perfect example. I've gotten to a point now where I can just sort of be freeform. I learned all the rules, and now I can break them, so I don't have to have a part anymore. That's so funny. See, there's an example right there of what happens when you're around people for too long and they get comfortable. But when we're on these little trips, it's a lot of that. We've got a couple of new people with us in our group, and so they haven't quite softened up or worked their way into that little bit of shuck and jive, I guess, that we do, but they will.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
They'll get there eventually. Well, it was nice talking to you, Kurt. We hear RoboDrone coming in. That means our 30 minutes is up. It goes fast, doesn't it? Man, it just goes before you know it. All right, everybody.
I appreciate
you
having me on.
Thank you again for tuning in. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Brilliant Ideas Radio. And we'll see everybody. Yes, that's right. We'll see you next week. Crisco. All right. No, you won't see me wear my sunshades in the night. Oh.
house, cause I see you acting tough. Keep your bucks, I don't need them, it's not enough. The strings on this heat tore are all that I trust you in first. I'm at last, that's what you think. Pile around your house, time to win on the creek. And you pigs, look like lunch, it's time to eat. Better watch your back, cause it's one place for keep.